Hi, today's May 20th, 2017. This is Mobius Podcast number 206. I'm Todd Ogasawa with my good friend John Westfall. And today maybe we'll talk about Google I.O. I don't know if there's anything that really excited you that was announced at Google I.O., John. Meh.
And then a bunch of other stuff. I liked everything at Google I.O. I thought it was all very much evolutionary, not revolutionary. Good stuff. I think some of the changes to Home will definitely make it more useful.
Okay.
And yours and I, we have our favorite Google product of late has been Google Photos.
Yes.
And definitely some cool stuff coming to that.
Right. So we'll start with that. So the one I can't say, first of all, I did really not follow Google I.O. that closely. The sum total of my Google I.O. knowledge probably comes from listening to part of Twig, This Week in Google, Leo Burt's Twig, which they reported from Google I.O. I don't think I even listened to the full Twig yet. But anyway, the thing about Google Photos that I thought was most interesting was a future feature, not available yet, which can remove unwanted foreground objects. Like, for example, the example they give is watching your kid play Little League Baseball, and there's a fence in front of you, and it removes the chain links, which is pretty cool. So I'm looking for that, because I run into that problem every now and then. I'm wondering, you know, how good it is with objects you may not be that familiar with. So, for example, if you're at a zoo, and you have, you know, some unwanted object in front of you, like a chain link fence between you and a tiger, can it do a reasonable job? But looking forward to that. The other one is kind of, to me, is a revision. So Google used to have a product. Boy, John, maybe you remember what it was called. But it was a product that let you look at things and try to identify it. Anyway, they're kind of a, you know, augmented reality kind of thing. And they're reviving it. They're calling it Google Lens, and it's going to be embedded with Google Assistant. So the idea is you can point your phone at something like a flower or an you know, some other object, and it will try to identify it for you, which is kind of neat. It, too, is not available. Not a lot announced at Google I.O. is actually available. In fact, I don't think anything announced at Google I.O. is available, or is available soon even, including Google Android O. I don't know what that is, Oreo, whatever they're going to call it. I don't know. So yeah, that was it. That's the sum total of things I found. I mean, there are other things like some of the artificial intelligence stuff they're doing, but, you know, I don't do AI. I haven't done AI stuff in many, many years, so not.
What about the Google Assistant on iPhone? Are you interested in that at all?
That's a tough one, you know? I don't know. I mean, I do use the Google, what do they call it now? It used to be just a Google app, the search app. And I like it because it searches for things I'm interested in, like news items. It's just called Google. Mm-hmm. And I like that. Is that what you're talking about, John? Is it going to enhance
that? Well, you'll be able to download the Google Assistant app. It'll be a separate standalone app, and it will presumably bring Siri type integration to the Google Assistant on iPhone instead of just simply having the limited Google Assistant that you get on the Google app. So the Assistant, basically the Verge is reporting that it's headed to iPhone to take on Apple Siri. However, the Assistant won't be able to operate exactly like it does on Android devices, Google says, because there are API restrictions. But it can do general stuff like send iMessages, play a song on your Spotify app, but it can't set alarms. Again, it's one of those things where they're trying to make it more useful on iOS, but obviously it's not in Apple's best interest to let you kick Siri to the curb for Google, so they can only do so much. But if you really like Google Assistant more so than Siri or any of the other assistants out there, it's not a bad option to have.
Right. So I don't use the Google speech recognition stuff. Actually, I don't use Siri that much either, so it doesn't matter. But I will say I use the Google app on my iPhone, not to be confused with Chrome or Gmail or anything. Or Google Home. It's literally just called Google. It's a search app, but as I said a few minutes ago, it kind of keeps an eye on what I'm searching for, and if it thinks I might be interested in it, then it shows me news about it. So, for example, looking at it now, it shows me some Doctor Who stuff, if you're a Doctor Who TV fan. It says something about the 50th anniversary of the Sgt. Pepper album. It's got a Reddit link to something about corgis, because I like corgis. you know, things like that. So if it enhances that, I'm all for it, and I probably will use it, because I really don't use Siri. Siri's not very good, in my opinion. It doesn't do the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. It rarely recognizes my commands anymore, so I've kind of given up using it.
Yeah, I use Siri probably fairly regularly. I don't have too much trouble with it. I use Alexa quite a bit more, just because I have lights around my living room that Alexa turns on and off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but I do like the options for Siri. Yeah, I
didn't know you bought a Amazon Echo.
Yeah, about 4 or 5 months ago now.
Oh, okay, okay. Awesome. So you have joined the legion of Echo fans.
Yes, yes, I am. I am echoing.
Okay. And speaking of, I guess to pivot a little bit, the Echo's, what do you want to call it? Echo's competitor? Google Home? Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that their Echo-like thing?
I think we could call it that.
Okay. So it's a cylinder-ish device with no screen. Or does it have a screen? I don't even know. So what's new on that one? You have a little note in our list of things to discuss.
Well, yeah, Google Home will now be able to make calls, and this is something that I think is a natural evolution for these, and I thought it was interesting because just about a week and a half ago, Amazon rolled this out to mm-hmm. Alexa, so mm-hmm. Alexa can now do the same thing, and of course, Siri can obviously make calls because Siri is on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is kind of a natural evolution. Now, the thing I do wish that you could do with Alexa is that you could, call your own Echo Dot when you're away. So call home and have it just auto-answer if it's coming from you. That seems like it would be very useful for households where, you know, people might not always have their phone with them, but they're in a common area and the, you know, Echo is nearby. It can be, hey, incoming call from so-and-so, and then
that's a good
you
one.
Can... it'll auto answer. So yeah. It seems like that would be useful for parents and for, you know, people who are traveling to be able to check in and see how things are going.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, and given that the Echo has the amazing 7 microphone array system on it, if it could be used for emergency or near emergency, you know, I fall and I can't get up kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
That would be awesome, but I don't think it does that yet.
No, but that does bring to mind a feature that is very rarely talked about with Apple Watch these days,
mm-hmm.
and that is the SOS feature.
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
It was sort of released about, it was with the last major watchOS update, but now if you hold on to the bottom button of mm-hmm. your Apple Watch,
mm-hmm.
You hold it long enough, one of the options is emergency SOS, and if you keep holding, it will activate it automatically.
Hmm.
And it basically, you set up a list of contacts mm-hmm. who get notified when you do that, and they know something's up and that you need help.
That's so pretty good.
Basically, if you are someone who, you know, may need assistance, you're mm-hmm. elderly or you have some disability of some sort, it's a way to have one of those little life alert bracelets without having to have one of those. You
yeah.
can still have an Apple Watch. And assuming that your phone is nearby somewhere, you can set that up. And as long as you can grasp your watch hard enough to hold down that button
right.
for
which
10,
might
15
be iffy
seconds.
For some people, but yeah.
Well, in that case, you probably wouldn't be able to hold on to one of those bracelets or lockets, whatever
true.
It is, and activate them there too. So,
yeah.
But that's a feature I find most people have not heard of on
yeah.
Apple Watch emergency SOS.
Yeah, I'm not a watch user, but. You know, I do listen to what features on it, and I had not heard about that one myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, the Alexa call thing, that's kind of interesting. Also, that the Echo Look, I think it's called, with the mm-hmm. screen that's coming out. I was thinking about buying one, you know, putting one in my home, putting one in my mom's home, so I can just do kind of a two-way. I mean, she can't do Skype and stuff like that, so, you know, I was thinking, I mean, I put a notebook in her home, but she never uses it. So I was thinking of something really super easy, you know. For her to use, you know, giving limited finger mobility and things like that,
mm-hmm.
that might be good. So I'm still thinking about it. I am a little concerned about apparently the video calls are automatic barge in, which might not be appropriate at all times, but
I guess we'll see how that's handled as it rolls out, but yeah. It's sort of what I want audio wise on Amazon. Basically what I would like is that if you're the owner of a system,
yeah,
you can configure that system and do whatever you want. Yeah, if you want it to always barge in, if it's someone else's, then I don't know if I like that it can be configured for auto barge in or something like that.
So. Yeah, so, okay, next up, I have I don't know if I want to call it a rant. And it really, the rant, I'm looking at my show notes. My rant is misdirected. So, in the show notes that you and I share, I have something that says, Gogo Wireless Entertainment failed on Alaska Airlines. But really, it's not Gogo Wireless let me back up on that. It kind of is Gogo Wireless. So this
you're angry at somebody, and we just don't know who yet.
Yeah, I want to direct my anger at somewhere. I'm not quite sure where it should be directed. I think it's Gogo Wireless.
Okay. The
more I think about it. So Alaska Airlines has basically removed all of the in-flight entertainment electronics on the two flights I was on last week. And that's understandable, right? They're heavy. They're expensive.
Not many people use them.
Not many people use them. You know, basically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So what they did makes a lot of sense in theory. And that is they contracted with Gogo Wireless. So they have a Wi-Fi hotspot on the plane. And when you get above 10,000 feet, you can connect to this Wi-Fi hotspot. And if you're using anything but iOS, you can directly connect to it via the web. If you're using an iOS device, you must have the Gogo Wireless Entertainment app to watch TV shows and movies. This all sounds perfectly reasonable to me, in theory. And it's free, by the way, as far as I can
tell. Well, that sounds very reasonable.
Yeah.
Very unlike the airlines, reasonable.
Right.
But it's Alaska Air, so
yeah,
they're not as evil as some of the others.
Yeah, I like Alaska Air. I fly them frequently. And if you don't have any kind of device, you can rent a device for $10 for the duration of the flight, which is also I think is pretty reasonable. And, watch a number of stored movies on the device. But at any rate, so the first time I went, I didn't know this because I haven't flown Alaska in about a year and a half, I think. And I didn't have the app installed, so it was not a big problem. I had stuff on my iPad to watch. But while I was over in Oregon, I decided, hey, I'm going to install the app. And I got on the plane, and I tried connecting to the Wi-Fi, and I just could not connect to the Wi-Fi hotspot after we hit the 10,000-foot. Elevation. And so I tried it a couple of times during the flight, but I don't know if it was just my device, and I tried an iPad mini 4 and an iPhone 7 Plus, or it was just too many people were using the hotspot, and they couldn't let me on. But basically, it didn't work at all on either device, either, like I said, iPhone or iPad mini. And so to me, that was a fail. And I'm going to blame Gogo Wireless because it's their hotspot. And I guess I'll blame Alaska Airlines for not checking with their contractor to make sure this stuff is bulletproof. And quite frankly, it should be bulletproof, right? I think.
Well, I have never used in-flight anything, entertainment or Wi-Fi. I can hardly, with my size, pulling out a laptop is pretty much, unless I have two seats. The one time I was ever able to work on a plane was when there wasn't anyone sitting next to me, and so I could actually get comfortable enough to work. But so for me, I've always sort of regarded those systems as, well, that's great, but I wouldn't want to have just that. So I always have podcasts loaded up and books and music and that sort of thing. So maybe I'm just old school. Maybe I'm just kicking it 2005 style.
Yeah,
I haven't moved up in the world, but I can understand your frustration.
Yeah. Well, I will say that no matter what size you are, airline seats are getting so small recently. And getting smaller, by the way. I read that American Airlines is going to reduce leg space even more. Pretty soon you'll be standing up. And they do have seats where you're standing up in flight. But
see, for me, it's not really the leg space that gets me. It's the shoulder width. That's my problem. My
shoulders, bumping into people.
Well, my shoulders are about 18 inches apart.
Yeah.
So I don't compress. My shoulders don't.
Let's rephrase it, John. You could compress and be extremely painful.
Well, I do spend most of my flights with my arms crossed.
Yeah.
You know, kind of pulled in like this. So I look very angry most of the time.
But what you're being is you're being very polite and considerate is what you're being.
Yeah, I that's sort of what I have to do. But it is getting to the ridiculous level of, I mean, literally the seats just are not wide enough for my shoulder span. It doesn't matter how much weight I would lose. My shoulder span is still going to be.
Yeah, they're
going to
be the same width.
That far out. So.
Yeah. So. I will say that the iPhone 7, the iPhone 6 Plus, 7 Plus screens are big enough for me to enjoy watching a video. I wouldn't do it at home, but an airplane is fine. And in fact, I think I watched a couple episodes of Doctor Who on my phone on the way up. So, you know, I'm okay with just pulling out the phone, not having anything larger than that to watch.
You know, speaking of having something with you where you need entertainment or you need distraction, my wife and I went shopping yesterday. We kind of we live in the middle of nowhere, so we had to drive about 2 hours to get to
somewhere,
the big shopping district where we could go outside of Jackson, Mississippi. Right. So Carrie wanted to look at a number of craft stores, and one craft store, and then she had a few other stores she wanted to hit. So I'm not a huge craft person, but I had my AirPods with me.
Oh.
And so as we were wandering around, I had one AirPod in, and I was listening to a podcast, and I could still hear when my little bit of input was needed. I was still able to talk to her and all that, but, man, it made that hour go by a lot quicker than it otherwise would have. So technology's a great thing. AirPods are great things.
Well, you know, speaking of AirPods, so I went to the Portland Apple Store, and achievement unlocked. I got my $9 Lightning to 3.5mm adapter, my backup set. So, yay, got that, which was totally sold out in Honolulu. But at the time, I offered to buy my daughter, who just graduated from college, I offered to buy her a set of AirPods if she wanted it. And she was, not really, but, you know, I said, well, why don't you take a look at them? And she did, and she thought, oh, they're kind of interesting. But guess what? They are completely sold out in Portland, which is a pretty big store. They said, oh, it's about 5 to 6 weeks to wait these days. So,
wow.
Yeah. I haven't tried ordering one because, you know, she wasn't, like, super excited about them. Although, you know, she did want a new Bluetooth headset. But, 5 to 6 week wait is what they're told if you're going in store.
And there's one other thing about AirPods that was a weird sort of thing that I can, I guess, say is a feature. When I would keep the AirPod case in my left pocket, so I'd pull it out, flip it open, pull an AirPod out, put it in my ear, close the case with that little satisfying snap that it has. And it reminded me very much so of when you watch old movies and a character pulls out a cigarette case and pulls out a cigarette, snaps it shut, and so I don't think any of us think smoking is a great idea these days, but there is something undoubtedly cool and debonair about those actions, and if you want to get a geek version of it, get yourself an AirPod case, because that snap when you close it, very satisfying sound, and
yeah, so maybe
get to pull out an AirPod. I realize this sounds very strange, but it's...
Yeah, you know, if you watch the original Sean Connery, to me, the best James Bond movies. You know, he smokes, right? James Bond smokes, and he would, you know, flip open a case, either a cigarette case or a cigarette, whatever you call those little cigar things, case, an occasional lighter. So yeah, this is like the 21st century lighter or cigarette case.
Yeah, it's how you are geekly cool, I suppose. And in that case, that means it's not really cool. Oh. But it, you know, had the same psychological impression on me.
Okay, speaking of AirPods, did you go back and listen to the podcast where you recorded using AirPods, and what did you think?
No, I have not done that yet. I just thought about that about 5 minutes before we went. I'm not on them this week, so I might sound normal or abnormal.
To me, you sound normal this week.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd really appreciate it if you would go back, because I want to get your opinion of how you think you sound using the AirPods versus what are you using now? Using a microphone in your headset?
Yeah, I'm just using the Apple microphone built. Yeah, yep. Yeah. I do actually have another microphone that I haven't used in a few years, but I did use it when we first started podcasting. So I could I should compare all three of those and figure out what John I like the most.
Right. I used to do this a lot, by the way. I used to record a lot of what I call mini podcasts, where I would just stand outside with various headsets and things on my iPhone or Android device and record, you know, like 2-3 minute podcasts, sometimes even less than that, just to see what it sounds like in terms of dealing with ambient noise, general sound quality, that side of thing. It was kind of fun. I even recorded one in Edinburgh, Scotland, standing outside of an Apple store last year. But in any case, alrighty. So not ranting, just kind of observations. So just wanted to return to my Chromebook OS saga. Still using my Samsung. Let's try to get that name correct.
The Freudian slip there. Samsung
does not, well, except for the ones that catch on fire. But Samsung Chromebook Plus, still one of my favorite devices, one of the best purchases I've made this year, I think. Although if I had waited a few weeks, I could have saved a couple of bucks on Amazon. It dropped from $449 to $389, I think, for a while. But in any case, a couple of notes. One, I've already pointed out, but I just will reiterate because it's still true. I have not installed that many Android apps on it. And that was the whole point for me waiting for the Samsung Chromebook Plus, because it was the first Chromebook that came out of the box supporting Android apps versus, some of the other supporting devices that require you to install the beta version of Chromebook OS and, you know, bring in the Play Store. So, still not using the Android apps as much as I thought. But here's a couple of observations of the ones that I have used. So, one I've mentioned in the past, and it's still a problem, is that Google Movies, or whatever it's called, where you can watch TV shows and movies on an Android device, it works okay on a Samsung Chromebook Plus. It can download movies and play them back offline, or, you know, just without having to use streaming bandwidth, okay, but you still can't display a full screen without borders. You still see a status bar and things like that, which is kind of odd. Number two, and this is kind of annoying because I use Evernote so much, the Evernote Android app on the Chromebook Plus launches, you can create a note, but I can't seem to edit an existing note. So if I create a note and then I go back to it and I try to edit it to add, you know, text or whatever, edit, can't seem to make it work. And it's not consistent, so I won't say it's 100% of the time, but
that's just Google saying that you got it right the first time. There's no need to edit. You were perfect. It's a self-esteem boosting feature.
And the other thing is, it's funny, you know, there's a YouTube icon on the Chromebook Plus, which you can click, but it really launches the Chrome browser. And you basically launches a tab in the Chrome browser. If you've already got Chrome open, it'll open another tab that puts, you know, YouTube.com on it. But what you can't seem to do is download a video. And there were some videos I wanted to watch in a plane. I should say I took an iPad mini, so it's not a problem. But if I were traveling with a Chromebook Plus, it means that I couldn't download, you know, there's some pretty long YouTube videos, shows from other countries, things like that, that are, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes long. So it'd be kind of nice to have, you know, offline.
My favorite long YouTube video.
Yeah.
There is a 2-hour presentation that was at one of the, forget what which con it was, but it was one of the security, security/hacker cons recently that's on elevators.
Elevators.
That's 2 hours on how basically how elevators work and the, you know, logic behind how elevators are designed and the electronics and how people who are in the penetration testing field use elevators to get into parts of buildings. And it was it's a very interesting 2-hour presentation by a man by the name of Deviant Allah, or what was it? It was in my brain. It's gone. But anyway, if you just look for how to hack elevators on YouTube, it's 2 hours. It's a great 2 hours of your life.
See, I mean, that's something if you wanted to, you might not, you know, if you just want to think about it, you could download it before you hit the airport, and there you go. I should note, by the way, speaking of Wi-Fi and things at airports, Our airport in Honolulu has nothing to speak of that I can figure out. But but when I hit PDX, Portland's airport, Portland, Oregon's airport, I was just sort of sitting waiting for my shuttle to take me away. And outside, you know, it's outdoor by the parking area. It was, I think, like 30 megabits down and 15 megabits up. It was really nice. So kudos to Portland, Oregon's Wi-Fi system, which is free, by the way, which really sort of, you know, helped me out while I was sitting there, both coming and going. So,
And I found the talk on YouTube, so okay. We'll put it in the show notes if people have 2 hours to watch.
Okay. It is.
People think I'm nuts when I talk about it.
Yeah, it's by a guy called, I'm reading your notes, Deviant
Alum.
Alum. I assume that's not a real name.
Nope, that is not, but it is the name that he uses in the hacker culture / penetration testing culture. Right. So it's from, where was this at? The HopeX conference a few years ago. So.
And it's called From Pit to Penthouse.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, speaking of hacking, you had a topic that appears to be near and dear to your heart. I have to admit, I was traveling, and I did not see... Well, I wasn't keeping up on news as much, but I did see what was going on, and what's your... It seems like most of the PCs hit from what that one article I read were Windows 7 boxes.
Yeah, so the recent ransomware attacks, and I will... As you probably guessed from me watching 2 hours on elevators, I have one of my focus areas in information technology is information security. So I find this to be kind of interesting to keep up with. And the recent ransomware attacks, this is truly the worst of, I think, black hat hacking out there. You know, white hat hackers are the ones who try to figure out how to extend things, and if they find a flaw, they get them reported so that groups can be patched. All the black hat hackers are the ones that are out there for, you know, the money and that sort of thing. Ransomware, I think, puts people in a really bad position that otherwise don't really deserve it. But for those of you that haven't heard this before, you've been under a rock, ransomware is basically a computer virus that your computer gets. It runs in the background. While you are working, it encrypts all of your files. And then once everything is encrypted, it pops up a message saying, hey, if you want to get your stuff back, send us $300 of Bitcoin. And if you don't send us $300 tomorrow, it's going to go up to $500. And the day after that, it'll go up to $700. And then after 7 days, we're just going to delete the decryption key. So you're not ever getting your stuff back. Particularly nasty. And particularly nasty in that most of these will encrypt everything that's connected to the computer, spread through networks. Many companies have found themselves having one computer affect a network share. So if the user that was running had permissions to write to that network share, all of a sudden the network shares a bunch of encrypted files. And if you don't find this out in time, it could get into your backups, and then your backups are encrypted. So it's a pretty nasty sort of thing. And this last wave that hit hit a number of high profile targets. It hit Britain's National Hospital Service quite hard, spreading through their network and a number of other places. And of course, to not get too much into politics, it seems like it was an exploit that the NSA had knowledge of months ago or even years ago and did not report to Microsoft, who could have patched it. Microsoft did find out about it in March, when a leak of NSA secrets got out, and they did patch it. So if your sysadmin has been keeping you on a good patch schedule, then you didn't have to worry about it.
But it would have to be on a supported OS, right?
Yep.
Because until after this ransomware thing, Microsoft was not supporting security updates for some of their older releases.
That's true, although they did release a fix for XP.
Yeah. So but it was not available in a March release when Windows 10, for example, was patched.
No. So we kind of know as home users and independent users that you want to keep your devices updated as much as possible. But if you are on a corporate machine, you don't always have full access to change those things.
Or
you
any might access.
You might be waiting for your network to push things down. If they don't do it, I know, for example, places I've been, due to compatibility issues, patches don't always get pushed down quickly while they're in testing. You could conceivably in May not have an update from March. So what do you do as an employee? That was really kind of the thought that I had. If you are just a rank-and-file employee, and all of a sudden all of your work for the last couple of weeks gets encrypted, what can you really do to get around that? Yeah, you're shaking your head. There's not a lot of options. Cloud storage? You could, you know, if you have Dropbox or OneDrive Personal or something like that, yeah, you could try that, but it's going to be encrypted. So in case, unless you can go back and get the previous versions, and some cloud storage systems do allow you to get previous revisions, so you might be able to go back and restore a version before it was encrypted, but that's going to be problematic.
And if you're in a large organization, they might even be blocking those services.
Exactly.
Yeah.
USB drives.
Which also might be blocked.
Could be blocked. Assuming they're not blocked, the way that I see most people use USB drives is that at the beginning of the day, they take them out, they plug them into their computer, they work with files all day, and then at the end of the day, they take the USB drive out. That's going to get encrypted too, because it's been there long enough. So if you were just popping it in, moving a file here, there, whatever, it might not get caught and encrypted. But so that USB drives are not going to be that useful. Email attachments. If you can do this, you could email certain key files to yourself off network, but that does violate many companies' information security policies. So if you are in an extremely locked down environment, there's nothing you can do, and your boss goes, convenient that your report got eaten up by ransomware and you know, something like that, what can you really do to at least document? I would actually recommend, if you are in that environment, for your own job safety and performance, journaling and time tracking.
If
to
you
say,
can.
Look, you can at least usually jot down, you know, spent this many hours on Project X, this many, you know, here's what I did today. And that's not only good for, it's good practice as an employee for year-end reviews and things like that, but it's also something that if worse comes to worse and your employer says, sorry, we can't get your files back, and we kind of probably screwed up because we didn't push a patch, at least you have something to show for every day you were at work, and hopefully your managers will be a little bit more lenient because you did document that you worked on those projects. They're just unfortunately gone.
Yeah. And before we get too far, although we're almost done, I just want to note there's been a kind of a beeping, clicking sound throughout most of the podcast, and I can't figure out where it's coming from. I've been looking at my setup, kind of looking at John's setup. It doesn't appear to be John. I was thinking maybe John's head moving, but nope, it's not associated with that. So sorry, folks. I don't know what's causing that little clicking sound, but John and I will try to track it down and figure out maybe it's an app on one side or another. I'm looking at what apps I have open now, seeing if something's annoyed at me and clicking at me, but it's something we haven't seen before, so we'll figure it out. Yeah, so I know that if for people who have not turned off their machines, I saw some kind of an unencryption thing that was a tool that was released. But I would bet that a lot of people were told to turn off their machines after it was found to be encrypted. So they probably have no recourse. I don't know what the solution is. It's one of those really scary ones.
Well, presumably if you didn't turn off your machine, the decryption key or the encryption key may still be in RAM somewhere.
Right.
That's probably why, but it's nasty stuff. It really is.
Indeed. Yeah, the world is becoming a very, very nasty place, or is already a very nasty place, and you just have to do your best to not do it. How were these ransomware attacks coming in? Were they coming in as email attachments, or what?
Yeah, email attachment, and then once it's on an infected network, it just spreads to over. This is a flaw in server message block, SMB. So the same sort of stuff that used for Windows file sharing is exactly how it spreads, and that's where you get into trouble. I think I read something that even said it had something to do with the old WINS protocol, WINS, that's about 30-year-old file sharing protocol now. Or network addressing protocol. So, that's the problem when you have backwards compatibility built into your product. Sometimes a bug that's been there for...
But it's going to some weird URL. But some of them are really well crafted. And
new guy who is, you know, a bench tech. All they're really doing is imaging hard drives, something like that, joining them to the domain. And it's a lot easier to just give them domain ad.
Podcast 206 after 1 week hiatus. We will probably during the summer have a couple hiatuses as John and I have various activities that take precedence over our little podcast. But for those of you patient enough to wait for them over the summer, thanks. For the fives of you who have anything interesting you'd like us to talk to, or if you want to talk with us and join us, let us know.
And if you would like us to not take any hiatus, we can be paid to,
oh, yeah,
to change our... I mean, we can reprioritize,
oh, yeah,
at any time.
Yeah. Yeah, we are not proud.
No.
Nor are we wealthy. So...
But if you would like to make us wealthy...
That's right.
We will be happy to help you out with that.
Okay, so next up we've got, let's see, we've got a couple things up there we can probably discuss this time. I think like in next week, there's some kind of a Microsoft hardware show in Shanghai, where apparently the Surface Pro something is going to be announced.
Perhaps.
WWDC comes up, what, like first, second week of June?
I believe it's the second week of June.
Okay, so
maybe it's the end of the first week, but yeah, that's the one I usually get excited about, so.
Okay, we've got a couple of... We've got a couple of things coming up, and let's see. Do I have anything for geeks? As I say, we do not have any sponsors or anything. But one of my favorite authors is a guy named Daniel Suarez, and he has a new novel that just came out called Change Agent. And most of his other novels have been AI-ish and that sort of thing. This one is... kind of genetic technology. It's about CRISPR and stuff like that. So, so far it was kind of a little slow for a while. I'm about 2-3 hours into it now. I think it's like a 15 hour. I don't actually read things anymore. It's an Audible book. I've got 12 hours, 27 minutes left in it. It just started getting kind of exciting, but, I'm a big fan of Daniel Suarez's novels. So even though I'm not super excited about it so far, his books sometimes start fast, like his first couple ones, but his later books take a little bit of build-up, and I think this is one of those. Give it a try. You might find it interesting. Okay, John, thank you as usual, and I'll talk to you on our next podcast. Thank you, folks.